Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What sort of exercise does your heart need to stay healthy for life? The world has no shortage of magazine articles and books promising breakthrough guidance on the best way to stay trim and toned. And sadly, this country has no shortage of people who find such advice either so daunting or so uninspiring that they lead largely sedentary lives. My guests today have spent much of their time putting hypotheses about what keeps hearts strong to the test. They're here for the hour to answer your questions at 1-800-933-5372. Dr. Ben Levine is director of the UT Southwestern Institute for Exercise and Environmental Medicine. Dr. Tony Babb is the Institute's Director of Cardiopulmonary Research. Gentlemen, welcome to Think.
Good to be here.
Thanks.
So is this problem of sedentary lives, is this largely something that we've only seen in the 20th and 21st centuries?
Wow. You know, certainly being sedentary is become increasingly a problem as our society has become increasingly mechanized. Now you pop in your car, drive wherever you need to go. People don't exercise as much. They sit in front of the TV, play video games. There's little doubt that physical activity has decreased dramatically. And that's to a large extent responsible for the equally dramatic increase in obesity throughout the United States, but particularly here in the South. It's one of the things that Tony's interested in.
Yes. We see in the individuals that participate in our projects a big decrease in their level of physical activity.
Mm-hmm. Now, is sort of aerobic exercise the only thing that counts to keep a heart strong?
Well, in our particular interest with the obesity, it's any type of physical activity. It doesn't even have to be a routine exercise program. It's just getting out and being active, taking opportunities to walk to your car, do activities in the yard. So we think more of asking them to do physical activity. When you start talking about changes for the heart, then you're talking about maybe training programs.
Right. So let me just take a step back for a second and make sure that our audience understands the differences of the different kinds of exercise. Typically, in the exercise world, we divide different types of exercise into dynamic or strength training. Dynamic mm-hmm. exercise is what most people think about as aerobic. It requires the repetitive contraction of large muscle groups, walking, running, swimming, rowing, biking, stair-stepping, elliptical piece of equipment. All those increase your heart rate. You do it for a prolonged period of time, and it increases both caloric expenditure as well as load on the heart. We typically think of strength training as weightlifting, but it also can occur with other types of exercises, plyometrics or boxing or kickboxing, things like that. The problem is that the division is not always so clear. I mean, for example, when you row, each time you pull on the oars, either in the water or on an ergometer in the health club, the blood pressure goes up really high. All the muscles contract statically, and it's a combination of strength and dynamic exercise. And different kinds of exercise lead to different kinds of adaptations. So endurance training makes the heart dilate, get bigger. As you increase the strength component, the heart walls get thicker, and the muscles get a little bit bigger. They tend to use sugar a little bit more efficiently. You need a little bit less insulin. So making the muscles bigger is a very productive thing to do. One of our goals in many of our studies is actually to make the heart bigger, and that turns out to be quite effective.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number if you have a question. You can also send email to think@kera.org. I want to talk about the idea that there is intensity of exercise and the benefits that it has, and then there's also duration. So are you better off going really hard for 20 minutes or going at a moderate pace for an hour or an hour and a half?
It probably depends on what the purpose is of the exercise or what you're training for. The recommendation is 3 days a week, about 30 minutes a time at a moderate intensity. But it really depends on if you're trying to train for an event or you're just trying to go through a conditioning program.
Yeah, it's really actually a quite interesting question, Chris. I mean, we tend to think about exercise almost like a medication. It comes in a different as you say, dose, different frequency, duration, intensity, mode, all the same things we think about with medications. And the different doses will have different effects. And so there traditionally has been most of the attention on long duration, relatively moderate intensity exercise. But in the last 5 or 10 years, stimulated by a group from Norway, there's been a lot more interest in what's called high-intensity interval training or high-intensity aerobic intervals. Exercise, for example, what the Norwegians call a 4x4, 4 minutes at 95% of maximal capacity, followed by 3 minutes of recovery, and repeat that 4 times. And that turns out to be a very quick way of increasing both endurance and strength. And we are we started to increasingly recognize that you can get a lot of bang for a small buck, only 30 minutes a day, and you may increase your maximal capacity by 1% per workout. It's quite dramatic.
So, Tony, working with patients who struggle with obesity, of course, not all of them are sedentary, but for a lot of people, it might suddenly seem like, I have all this weight to lose, and I haven't exercised in 10 years. How do you get someone on the path to where it seems possible that they can go for a run around the lake or something?
Well, it's been interesting in our work that not all obese individuals are lacking in exercise. We think sometimes, say, well, their biggest problem may be that they're not very active, and that's why they have this weight. But many times they are very active. Now, they may not go through a regular exercise program, but what maybe they're not doing is sort of putting together the diet and the exercise. But at least in our projects that we're looking at now, we don't often see what we call obese individuals that are out of shape. In fact, sometimes when they're just doing regular daily activities, they're carrying a lot of weight around with them. And there's actually conditioning effect with that, yes.
Yeah.
And we have to be recognize that when we're prescribing exercise for them, not to send them out with the same type of prescription for exercise that you might a leaner individual, recognizing that small workloads will actually be a high-intensity exercise for them.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Leslie in Dallas. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. My question is, we were talking about these days having, you know, sedentary lifestyles, and I was curious, like in the turn of the century and industrial age, when people would sit 14 hours at a sewing machine or the sweatshops, what kept them from having the same issues, or did they, or was it just walking all the time or not eating the same things?
That's a good question, Leslie. And it sort of depends on what kind of exercise you're talking about. So, for example, some of the most famous studies looking at occupational exercise and cardiovascular mortality use longshoremen. And longshoremen typically have very vigorous, active lives. And then they start to say, well, now we're going to have to compare the longshoremen with the supervisors. I will say one of the most interesting ones to me was the studies by Jeremy Morris in England, who looked at the workers on double-decker buses in London. And he compared the drivers who sat there all day versus the ticket takers who had to run
up and down
the stairs. Mm-hmm. And the ticket takers had much lower cardiovascular mortality than the bus drivers. So I think this has been a problem for generations. People who do sedentary activities suffer from the consequences of sedentary behavior, which is a cardiovascular risk factor as important as smoking and high blood pressure and diabetes. Being sedentary is bad for your heart.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Greg in Dallas. Hi, Greg.
Hey, good morning, guys, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, so I have a question. I just started a swimming training program after a 30-year hiatus. I was a swimmer in high school, and I like the sprint exercise, the sprint swimming. I'm going to actually compete maybe next month. And my question is, when I'm swimming in a sprint mode, you know, like taking as few breaths as possible during my swimming, you know, the approach is you want to become anaerobic or almost hypoxic, and I'm wondering, what happens to your heart muscle development and in strength and all that, you know, kind of during hypoxic or anaerobic swimming versus, you know, aerobic? And should I try to combine both to, you know, I mean, how do I get the most benefit out of it? So I'd love to hear your guest's answer.
Sure.
Sure, that's an interesting question, Greg. Good luck on your competitions. First of all, let me correct one little thing. I think we have to be careful about the terms aerobic and anaerobic. What we think about when we say aerobic is exercise that uses oxygen as the final receiver in the oxygen transport chain to make fuel. And when you do high-intensity exercise, typically you burn glycogen, occasionally glucose, and you break that down, and that doesn't require oxygen. And that's why it's called anaerobic. But the human body, even in quote-unquote anaerobic swimming, virtually never gets hypoxic. Your CO2, carbon dioxide, builds up in your bloodstream much, much faster than the oxygen drops. And it turns out that the oxygen never falls too low, unless, of course, you're trying to do your advanced swim training in Nepal.
We will resume our conversation with Dr. Ben Levine and Dr. Tony Babb about healthy exercise, healthy hearts, and healthy weight in just a minute. Right now, Jeff Whittington is here, a breath of fresh air into the control room with some information about our fundraising campaign. Well, this is day one.
Yeah, here's the deal, Chris. So today, the Philip R. Johnson Foundation has offered KERA a $5,000 challenge grant. KERA will receive that if and only if we can generate $40,000 in contributions today by 2 p.m. That means in the next 1 hour and 42 minutes, we have to generate, well, here's the news. We're at 18,600. So we need to generate your call to 888-694-6931. We need you to step up and go online and contribute at kera.org right now, because we've still got to raise $21,000 and change by 2 o'clock to meet this challenge. Or we have to say thank you, Philip R. Johnson Foundation, for the offer of $5,000. But unfortunately, we weren't able to meet the goal, so we're not going to be able to accept it.
We want to be able to meet that goal.
Absolutely.
And you can help us. Go online to kera.org. I did it myself this afternoon. Jeff made a little additional gift to the station, and I did it online in under a minute. It's gotten that fast. If you have your credit card number memorized, which I do, you can be in and out very quickly, make your contribution, and make a really substantial difference in being part of the team that keeps public radio alive in North Texas. Thank you so much to Brett Waller in Dallas, Russell Hicks in Dallas, Lisa Ryan in Dallas.
We also heard from Porn Street Chong and McKinney, Marcy Novak in Dallas. They are challenging you, my friends, to call 888-694-6931. They are challenging you to go online to KERA.org and help us and everybody else that listens to and supports KERA. All the people who've called or contributed online this morning want to make this challenge. That's $5,000 that the station is not going to be able to receive and use to bring you shows like this one and all the other shows you hear every day on KERA 90.1. So please be the next one to call. 888-694-6931.
We have a limited time special offer. We have the new I Saved Public Radio mug and the KERA reusable shopping bag. If you're interested in a thank you gift, this is available at the $50 level. Very affordable and makes a statement about your love of public radio and your role in public radio in North Texas.
888-694-6931. Online at kera.org. And as you probably know, if you've been listening today, it is the first day of the membership campaign. We're giving away an NPR internet radio every hour that will give you access to 16,000 online radio stations from across the world. And the winner,
including this one.
Yeah, including this one. That's right. And the winner for the 11 a.m. to noon hour is Nancy Gilderhus. Nancy Gilderhus in Fort Worth, congratulations. You've won the radio. You could win the radio for this hour if you call 888-694-6931.
Remember, it only takes a couple of seconds or maybe at most a couple of minutes. The fastest and easiest way to do this is online at kera.org. Or, of course, you can always do this on the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are Dr. Tony Babb, who is Director of Cardiopulmonary Research at the Institute for Exercise and Environmental Medicine, and Dr. Ben Levine, Director of the UT Southwestern Institute for Exercise and Environmental Medicine. This is a partnership between UT Southwestern and Texas Health Resources. You can find more information about that online, and of course, we have links to more information on the Think page of KERA.org. If you want to be part of our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Before we came in and Jeff came in to take the break, you were answering a question about swimming and sort of holding your breath while you swim and the best way to train, and you had a few more comments.
Sure. This was to Greg. I don't know if you're still listening, Greg, but it's important for any athlete to make sure that they have a good base of training, and that involves buildup of strength and endurance, followed by incorporation of high-intensity interval-type training, which means training that you can't sustain for that period of time because of the intensity. And that's due to buildup of metabolites, lactate and hydrogen ion and other things probably in muscle, as opposed to hypoxia or lack of oxygen. So get a good solid base, add in your intervals. The length of those intervals depends on what kind of event you're trying to compete in. Get a good coach who will bring you in, and you'll do fine. Good luck.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Mark in Dallas. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Chris. Hey, great show.
Thanks.
Just a question. I'm 44 years of age, been doing martial arts for 20 years. When I'm working up to certain programs, I've put a heart monitor on, and I'm tacking 195, 197 peak rate on my heart, and I have a caloric intake of around 2,700 to 3,000 calories a day. Are either one of these extremes going to cause me a problem in the future?
Okay, well, let me talk about the heart rate, and it sounds like you're doing some interval training there, which is great, and that's not surprising. It, of course, depends on the nature of your martial art and what the speed and intensity of which you do things. Hopefully, you have some recovery interspersed in those periods of heart rates of 190-something. As far as the caloric intake is concerned, Tony could perhaps speak to this better than me, and your problem will only arise if you start taking in more calories than you're putting out. Tony?
Yeah, that's our major concern is balancing how much you're expending with how much you're taking in. And as long as you're maintaining your weight, then you're pretty well balanced off. If you're losing weight or gaining weight, then you probably want to make an adjustment in there, either in the amount of activity that you're doing or in how much food that you're taking in.
And that happens often in athletes, or let me say ex-athletes. You get in the habit of taking in a lot of calories because you're burning a lot of calories during your exercise. And then something happens, you get an injury, or you're in the off-season, and you reduce your physical activity, but you don't reduce the caloric intake. And that's how you can get into trouble.
Yeah. Is the natural tendency when someone begins to exercise more than before to start eating more without realizing it? Or how does that work? Are most people able to eat the same amount even after they've begun a much more intensive exercise program?
Well, it probably depends on how you start that exercise. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's a reasonable exercise program, then you may see a little bit of increase in your appetite. But most of the literature suggests if you're doing 30 to 40 minutes a day, that you'll actually see a little bit of decrease in your appetite. Sometimes when we have individuals who are training for long periods of time, more endurance activities, then they have to up their intake a little bit to keep up with how much they're expending.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next on the line to Robert in Plano. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Great. Thanks.
I have a quick question on the strength and endurance. I heard the doctors talking about different ways of achieving it. Is walking a good way to achieve an optimal conditioning? And if it is, is it better to walk outdoor, which I prefer, and run and jog, or is it better to just stay indoor and get on the treadmill? And I also wanted to, you know, take the time and say thank you for educating us to stay healthy and be more productive.
Again, it sort of depends on what your goal is. If you want to increase your amount of physical activity, and then walking is a very good avenue for that. I usually recommend people start with something slower, 30 minutes or so, and then work their way up to maybe an hour of walking a day, especially if you want to try and lose some weight along the way there. But the other thing is, remember that we don't have to do it all at the same time. You could have 10 or 20 minutes in the morning. You can have 10 or 20 at noon, and then 10 or 20 in the evening, and that works very well. As far as walking inside, outside, I think it's just a matter of what you really enjoy doing.
Right. All right. Let me second that. I think that the key is finding something that you'll do. So if you will exercise outdoors and you like it, super. If it's bad weather and the choice is between not doing it and going inside on the treadmill, then my recommendation is to get on the treadmill. I do think it's important that we distinguish between training for performance, as some of our listeners have asked for, and training for cardiovascular health. And let's talk for a minute about cardiovascular health. And one of the things that we've noticed, we talked about the London bus drivers, for example, earlier, that people who are physically active survive longer and have lower cardiovascular mortality than people who are sedentary. So how much exercise do you need to do to get that benefit? And it turns out that the biggest bang for your buck, if you will, the biggest improvement occurs in that transition from being sedentary to being active. You have to do surprisingly not so much exercise to get a large proportion of that benefit. So getting off the couch, getting your walking in, the maximal benefit occurs with about 3,000 calories a week or so. And if you're walking or jogging briskly, that's, you know, about 3 hours or so. I'm sorry, 2,000 calories a week. And that's, you know, ends up being about 3 hours or so of moderate to exercise over the week. That's right. And so the key is doing that. Now, that you may have a different outcome if what your goal is to minimize cardiac stiffness or other aspects of vascular health. And we can talk about that later if we have more time. But you have to ask yourself what your goal is.
Yeah, because many times you may have an exercise program where your goal is to participate in some type of running event or basketball or something like that. So you would have a routine that you would say, okay, I'm going to exercise for so long, it's for such an intensity. But then you don't have to rule out other activity during the day. It's also good to go in the evening and do some walking so that you sort of say, okay, this is the part of my training for my activity or my sport, and then this is how I'm just going to increase my physical activity for the rest of the day. And many times a good walk in the evening or the morning is great for that, or cycling as well.
1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next to Deborah in Arlington. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, this is Deborah.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been working out since September. I've lost 12 pounds.
Good
I've been
you.
Working out an hour, at least 5 to 6 days a week. And I'm just very frustrated. I'm 49 years old. I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm eating right, drinking water. It just seems like the weight just does not come off.
Tony, any ideas?
I mean, at first I thought she said that she had lost some weight.
12 pounds.
12 pounds. And, you know, that's great. And I can't remember the time frame of how long you've been doing that.
But 3 months. Since September.
Since September. So actually, I think you're doing all the right things.
Well, let me add a little bit to that. You know, there's no magic to this, guys. You know, it's about 1 pound of fat requires about 3,500 calories. You have to expend about 3,500 calories more than you burn to lose a pound of fat, and vice versa. If you take 3,500 calories in more, you'll gain a pound of fat. And as you know, they used to say on Star Trek, you can't break the laws of physics. You know, so that will be the case. And you're doing great. If you have lost 12 pounds in 3 months, that's about, let's just say, a pound a week approximately, which means that every day you have begun negative by about 500 calories, which is super. If you do an hour of exercise, that may burn, you know, depending on your intensity, you know, perhaps that 500 calories, that may be close to that. And if you're probably eating about the same, you've lost a bunch of fat. Now, let me add one more caveat to that. Sometimes when people do a lot of exercise, not only do they lose fat, but they gain muscle. And so in many ways, it's more important, not just your body weight, but your body composition. So rather than, you know, banging your head against the wall, I think you should be patting yourself on the back. We think you're doing a great job.
Yeah. And other things that you may notice are, you know, how your clothes fit, and if you were doing measurements, how much smaller that you're getting. So, again, that change in body composition doesn't always show up on the scale. But I'd say stay with it and just think of it as a way that you've changed your life, and now this is something that you're going to continue for a long period of time, rather than think about, I just want to do this long enough to lose so much weight. Think of it as now you've changed your lifestyle, and this is what you're going to do for a long period of time, and you just keep on losing that pound or so every week, and that's great.
Yeah, I want to really, really emphasize that point. I think that may be the most important thing that's been said today. Exercise, physical activity, is part of your personal hygiene. And what I say to my patients is I ask them, do you brush your teeth every day? Take a shower? Change your underwear? These are things that you do for your personal hygiene, and exercise must be part of that. And you are showing, you know, the perfect example of not doing anything radical, but making that slow, steady, consistent, and persistent improvements. If you continue this for a year, you'll have lost 50 pounds. If you do it for 2 years, you'll lose 100 pounds. So you got to think long term, and the same thing is true with weight loss. Conversely, I mean, let's just say it's 500 calories negative a day. You know, that's one big donut. You know, one big donut more than you put out, and you'll gain a pound a week, 50 pounds a year, 100 pounds in 2 years.
Is it important for most people to know their body composition? Is that something that we should have measured?
I don't think it's that important that you know exactly what the composition is. I mean, we work in a laboratory, and we're very interested in those numbers. But for the most part, getting on that scale once a week and just keeping track if our weight's going up or our weight's going down, and then be vigilant about what we're eating, especially the portions. I think that's one thing that we really need to concentrate on today is, how much am I eating? What is a cup? What's two cups? You know, you don't have to always be calculating the calories in your mind. You know when you're eating a large quantity of food.
Dr. Tony Babb and Dr. Ben Levine are my guests. They are here from UT Southwestern's Institute for Exercise and Environmental Medicine, which is a special partnership with Texas Health Resources. Jeff Whittington joins us now. We'll be back to our conversation in a moment. Jeff and I are going to talk to you about how you can support this radio station and the vibrant presence of public radio in your community.
Hey, Chris, and thanks to our guests for being here today and also enduring
our pledge breaks.
I think this is such an important topic, and the phone lines are full. We have a full board of calls. We actually, at the last break, Chris, I went down to Pledge Control Central and noticed that many of you responded. And thank you so much for calling 888-694-6931 or contributing online, especially right now at KERI.org. Why? Well, because the Philip R. Johnson Foundation has offered a $5,000 challenge grant to KERA. We can accept this $5,000 and put it to work turning on the lights and the microphones to bring you these kinds of discussions and programs every single day, but only if we reach the $40,000 raised mark by 2 p.m. The clock is ticking. We have 1 hour and 23 minutes to make it. We're waiting for an update, but you know, when we started the hour, Chris, we still had $21,000 and change to go. So your contribution right now at 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org is so crucial. Because we really do need to meet this challenge.
But, you know, if everyone listening made a modest contribution right now, whatever that is in your budget, we would be able to make that immediately. And, in fact, if everyone listening right now who will ultimately, throughout the course of this drive, eventually make a contribution, did it right now, we would get there. And that would be a huge source of support for KERA. You can join us by calling 1-888-694-6931. This is unprecedented, I think, in the history of things.
I guess we can unlock the studio door now.
Dr. Ben Levine has just made a contribution himself. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much.
We greatly appreciate your support of public radio. You don't have to come in here and be in the studio to make your contribution. You can also do this online.
If Chris and I look alarmed, because we never see cash
money around.
We're not
allowed to touch cash yet. We'll make sure that gets to the people who are in charge of the
money. What is that? So follow the, you know, here's the deal. We're hoping that you will see the leadership of the folks like Dr. Ben Levine here, who's just made a contribution, and all the people who've called or contributed online this morning, as a challenge to you to do something good for your community as well. Because KERA and public radio are only here as part of this, and I really firmly believe this, part of our democracy, because what this station does is it gives you a place to go where people don't yell at each other, where people treat each other with respect, even when they disagree. And that wonderful place is KERA. It's only made possible because you call or you contribute online at KERA.org at whatever level is right for you. So it really is important, especially with the Philip R. Johnson Foundation Challenge Grant of $5,000 at risk. It's on the table right now.
Whatever your contribution is, if we're able to make this challenge grant, consider that your contribution is your amount, say your, you know, whatever it is, plus $5,000, because you will have made it possible. Your contribution will take us there, and it really does add up over time. You know, we've been talking this hour about small lifestyle changes and beneficial things for our bodies adding up over time. It's the same thing with support for public radio.
Yeah, you've already made, and I've heard somewhere that it takes 28 gym visits to make going to the gym a habit. It takes, for me, it's about 6 weeks. You know, 6 weeks I do something regularly that's good for me, and I make it a habit. You've already made listening to KERA a habit. We don't even have to sell this to you. We just have to convince you that it's worth a little bit of your money. And you know what? Money's scarce these days. It's tight. Everybody is feeling the pinch. But don't you think it's important to have a place that you can go to hear the news, to hear information, to even be entertained in a way that respects you, respects everybody, and brings people together rather than, in these really polarized times, dividing you and segregating you off from the rest of your fellow citizens? That's exactly what public radio is not about. Public radio is here for you and for everyone. And that's why we think that it's fair a couple of times a year, and really only once a year, to ask you and expect you to call 888-694-6931 or expect you to go online to KERI.org and make a contribution.
It's also about really making your bank statement reflect your values. If you think about it, a lot of us make consumer purchases that reflect what we believe to be important about the environment and about the way things are made and about the people who are compensated for making the products that we use. Making a contribution to public radio is a natural next step because we know that you value public radio because you're listening right this minute.
Our producer down at Pledge Control Central, Chris, reminds us that the $1,500 friends level, a contribution at that level, if maybe it's time for you to renew your friends membership, would go a long way toward making this challenge. It's just $125 a month when you join as a sustaining friend. Just call 888-694-6931 and ask the volunteer who answers the phone for the details, or go online to KERA.org. Please do it right now.
Again, online, KERA.org, or 1-888-694-6931. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are Dr. Ben Levine and Dr. Tony Babb. They join us from Texas Health Resources Institute for Exercise and Environmental Medicine, which is a partnership with UT Southwestern. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Let's go next on the lines to Bobby in Dallas. Hello, Bobby.
Good afternoon. My question concerns alcohol, wine, but also liquor and beer. Does the alcohol molecule reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease? And also, are there any problems with consuming alcohol, for example, beer, and the caloric intake associated with beer?
Thanks for your call. We hear often that a little's good and a lot is very, very bad.
Yeah, well, I'll let Dr. Levine answer that part of it. But just the basics is it goes back to what you're balancing, what's your expenditure and what's your intake. And there are a lot of calories in alcohol, and you just have to make sure that you're accounting for those. We see many examples, not only with alcohol, but also with sodas, as people drink a lot more of their calories in a day than they should. And a lot often we will talk to individuals and say, listen, you need to sit down and look at 3 or 4 sodas a day. It can really add up. You know, there you're
600
talking
calories.
600 calories a day. And alcohol is the same way.
Right, I agree. And, you know, the question about the cardiovascular protective benefit of alcohol has been quite interesting in cardiovascular medicine, often called the French paradox, in part because people in France have such high fat intakes, but seem to have relatively low risks of cardiovascular disease. And one hypothesis is that it's related to the intake of red wine. I think Chris is the one who actually answered your question. Everything is okay in moderation. Too much alcohol, I'm afraid, is not going to be good for you no matter what you do. Exactly what the molecule is and what the basic biochemical mechanism is remains uncertain, though there are strong antioxidants in particularly red wine. Having a glass of it per day or a glass of beer seems to be perhaps even better than not drinking at all. But, of course, too much alcohol, we know all those bad side effects.
You said a glass.
One, yes. Mm-hmm.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Sharon in Arlington. Hi, Sharon.
Okay, no problem. Yes, this is Sharon. Yes, my question I think is kind of in line with maybe some of the other callers, and I think Deborah in particular. I'm not so much frustrated. I'm pretty dedicated. I do exercise. I've been doing it for 25, 30 years. So in that regard, I'm there. But lately, I had gained weight, but I've gone on a regimen. I exercise, and I've gotten my weight. I've lost almost 65 pounds in the last year and a half. But in the last 6 months, 15 pounds just, like, came back. And I just cannot explain it. And I do the one of the programs where you put in your current weight and you monitor your caloric intake. My question kind of comes back to, is there a point in the quality of calories that you take in and how it affects your weight? I don't know if the machines are off that much, and when you monitor your calories, I walk for an hour or hour and a half every day, plus I do the stairs for another hour. I calculate that I burn about 1,100 to 1,200 calories just in my exercise. And based on the program, I should be able to eat between 1,500 and 2,000 calories and still lose 2 pounds a week. But my body has, like, stayed the same.
Well,
like,
Sharon, you gave us a lot of really specific numbers. Maybe we can speak to sort of the general.
Just in general.
Yeah. Thanks.
In general, it's like I'm exercising, doing what I need to do from what I understand.
But you're still gaining weight.
Well, I gained, but yet in that gain, I've stayed the same for like 6 months, which tells me I'm probably eating too much, but I know I'm still expending at least 1,000 calories a day in my exercise.
Let's get an answer for you.
Well, sometimes what happens is that when you've lost a large amount of weight like you've lost is that you're keeping up with your exercise calorie loss, but what's happened now is you've gotten smaller, and in your just other daily activities that you're just moving around at work or at home or whatever you're doing, now that has actually gone down. So sometimes what you have to do when you sort of see this where you drop to a certain point and then you're not losing any more, and if you're not careful by decreasing how much you're taking in, then you start gaining that weight again. So the thing that you probably need to do is not worry so much about how many calories you're expending during your workout, but how many calories are you expending in the rest of your day? Because it could be that you're not carrying as much around, and walking out to the parking lot now doesn't cost you as many calories as what it used to. And this is something that we really need to, or we factor in when we're trying to prescribe exercise for an individual, especially when they've lost a lot of weight.
Right. And let me also, I think that's great, Tony, and let me also add two things to that. First of all, there's no magic to the numbers that come off these machines. They're not precisely calibrated to you and your activity. They are very, very gross estimates. And your practical experience, how much calories you take in and how much your weight loss is, tells you what your caloric expenditure must be. So, you know, it's not as exact a science as we wish it might be. Let me commend you, though, in one other important area, and that is your commitment to exercise. And my friend Steve Blair, who used to work here in Dallas at the Cooper Clinic, liked to say, "I'd rather be fit and fat than lean and sedentary." In other words, just your fitness by itself is quite important. And one of our young faculty members, Susan Lukoski at UT Southwestern, is quite interested in trying to tease out the relative roles of being fat or fit in long-term cardiovascular mortality. So I think you're doing the right thing by staying with your exercise. Don't obsess too much about the nuances of 10 or 20 calories here or there. Just weigh yourself every day and keep up your control of your calories. The last only little thing I would mention is that for people who really are doing everything exactly the way they've always done and have gained some weight, is perhaps go to your doctor and make sure there's nothing else going on. I think that's always worth checking.
Is there a point, you know, women often talk about after menopause, their metabolism changes a lot and it becomes harder. Is there a point in everyone's life where suddenly you have to eat considerably less than you could when you were a young person, even if you're still exercising?
Certainly as we get older, we don't need as many calories. So yes, that is true for all of us. And anyone that's sort of looked at their change with maybe going to college or something like that, where you're very active all the time, and then you go out and you take your first job. Now you're sitting in an office 8 hours a day. You're not walking all day. You got to make an adjustment there. Something I always caution people about is if something happens in your life and you gain a large amount of weight, let's say 10 or 20 pounds, it's very important to try and take some action to get that off, because usually we're always trying to balance this. I'm getting older, I should be eating less calories, but I'm eating the same and I'm gradually gaining weight over the years. And then if you have some bump to that, it's really important to get that off and then get back to what you need, just like Ben was saying, get on the scale and see if the weight's going up or going down and then make an adjustment.
Let's go back to the phones. We have time, I think, for one more call. This time we'll speak with Myra in Plano. Hi, Myra.
Hey, my question is that I've heard that consuming less than 1,000 calories a day can make you gain more weight when you're trying to lose weight. Is that true or is this a myth?
No. Not, I mean, it's pretty simple. If you're not going to get down to a point where everything's going to reverse the way it operates.
You can't to break the laws of physics.
Does it change the way your body responds to food in the long term when you're not eating 1,000 calories a day? Is that possible?
Well, let me say this. So what ends up happening for people who go on severe caloric restriction, and there are people who do that, by the way. If you look at animal data, animals who eat extraordinarily low calories do live longer than animals that eat higher amounts of calories. And there's a group, a very well-known group in St. Louis area, who eat 500 calories a day. It's this whole society of caloric restriction. I'm not sure that I would want to live any longer at 500 calories a day, but that's what these people do.
Time drags by.
That's exactly right. But what happens is, because they're eating so little, they also dramatically reduce their physical activity. And so, and then as Tony says, as their weight comes down, what happens is not only do you lose fat, but you lose muscle. And muscle is metabolically extremely active. And so there may come a point where your baseline metabolic expenditure becomes quite low as you've lost enough muscle mass to reduce that background minute-by-minute caloric utilization.
We still have a full board of calls. Unfortunately, we've run out of time for this hour, so I want to thank you both so much for being here. Dr. Ben Levine and Dr. Tony Babb both are with Texas Health Resources Institute for Exercise and Environmental Medicine, which is a partnership with UT Southwestern. Gentlemen, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks to all of you who have been listening this hour, who've participated in the show. Thanks especially to those of you who have made a contribution, maybe for the first time ever, to KERA and to public radio, maybe for the 50th time. We're always happy to hear from you, and we promise you that your money goes to very good use when you go online at kera.org or when you call 1-888-694-6931. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. I want to say special thanks to Chakrapani Jamdaneya and Alan. Jill Johnson in Fort Worth. Hey, Jill. Thank you very much for calling or contributing online. Charles Jinks in Dallas. Michael Page in Richland Hills. Ken Mooney in Plano. It might be Muni. And Jairo Flores in Dallas. They have gotten us to a total of about $22,000 raised, Chris, along with some other folks that you've got to thank. That means we still have $18,000 to go to meet the Philip R. Johnson Foundation $5,000 challenge grant. We've got to raise $40,000 by 2 o'clock to make that, to be able to accept that $5,000 from the Philip R. Johnson Foundation. I want to thank them for making the challenge, but we'd like to thank them and say, yes, we'll take it. because we made the goal. So your call right now to 888-694-6931, your online contribution at kera.org will make it happen.
Special thank you to David and Suzanne Taylor in Denton, Cecilia Rendon in Dallas, Mary Polanco in Plano, Jillian Bradshaw-Smith in Dallas, Wendy Lyman in Dallas, Rebecca Hunt in Irving, who made a friend-level contribution. Thank you so much, Rebecca. Thanks to all of you who have been calling, been going online. It really is a wonderful thing.
If you're looking for an excuse to get out there and do some of that exercise, we can offer you the special thank you combo pack. This was a really a very highly requested item during our KERA television fundraising campaign recently from the award-winning series Nature on PBS. It's the DVD and book. The DVD is Hummingbirds, Magic in the Air, and the book is called Hummingbirds of North America. We do get hummingbirds through here during the migrations.
Oh, yeah.
So you can check that out when you join the station at the $125 level. Of course, either of those items is available as a thank you gift individually, too. Just call 888-694-6931 or go to kera.org and check it out.
Thank you, Cecily and David Chetlin in Frisco, Susan Collins in Dallas, and Crystal Hayes in Dallas. They have gone to kera.org and made contributions or gone to 1-888-694-6931. A contribution from you adds up with all the other people, and really what we are, we become this sort of network that makes public radio possible. We really are all in this together. All of us love public radio, including those of us who work here. We love it. We value it. We know it is unlike anything else we can find on the dial here in North Texas. And we decide it's worth supporting because you pay for the things that matter in your life.
There's been a lot of talk lately about decency in the public forum, politically and otherwise. And, you know, I have a lot of pride in being able to say to you that this public radio station takes that and has always taken that aspect of what we do very seriously. We really want to make sure that everyone is treated with respect on our show and on our programming in general across the board. And that's what public radio is all about. You know, it's a place where you find that. It's a tranquil oasis, really, especially in the talk radio realm where, you know, there are any number of places you can go right now on your local North Texas radio dial if you want to hear people gripe and moan and yell at each other. You're just not going to find that here because public
not
radio
even behind
and
the
KERA,
scenes.
No. Public radio and KERA is about bringing everyone together. And, you know, that's a theme that we come to you with several times a year in these membership campaigns. You know, we really do all need to join together and support the station so that it can continue to thrive and continue to provide a service that I'm pretty sure your life would not be the same without. So call now, 888-694-6931. Make a contribution online at kera.org to help ensure that this service continues to be here.
The thing about public radio listeners, and Jeff and I count ourselves among you, is that, you know, everybody has opinions about certain things and beliefs that things are right or wrong and different ideas about the world. But public radio people want to get their information from an unbiased source and then make their decisions themselves. There are lots of other news outlets out there. A shrinking number of them really commit themselves to trying as hard as possible not to take a position on things. Public radio continues to be committed to telling you what is true, exploring ideas, not saying it's only right this way and everybody else is wrong. And we're really proud of that. We know that you've responded to it because we have a really wonderful number of people who listen. We wish that the number of people who listen that the number of people who make contributions more accurately reflected the number of you who listen. We would love to hear from you, maybe for the first time ever, right now at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. Make a contribution in any amount that makes sense to you.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, when it's all said and done, what are going to be the most important things in your life? Are they going to be wealth, power, influence, fame, perhaps, that you were able to attain? Or is it going to be how you lived and whether or not you made a difference in people's lives? You know, this is an opportunity for you to support the station. And, you know, when you've had that aha moment or the driveway moment or that moment where you learned about an issue that maybe you didn't know about before, or you heard a new perspective and it really changed the way you thought about something and you heard it on KERA, well, you're helping to provide that moment for someone else and perhaps for countless other people just by making a contribution at, say, $100 to KERA. Call 888-694-6931 or go online to KERA.org.
You'll be supporting your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1 Dallas-Fort Worth Denton, 100.1 K261 CW Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR Wichita Falls, 99.3 K257 EV Sherman. The number to support it all is 1-888-694-6931 or go to KERA.org. Thanks.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.